Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 20th, 2020. President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar say they are ready to form a unity government.
We sat today and agreed that we will form the government. And in the formation of the government, there are things that we will continue to discuss as a transitional government of national unity, such as security arrangement in Juba and protection of SPLM in opposition.
And a close confidant of President Salva Kiir steps down.
Yeah, I always don't want to watch our dead leading in public. As I said when I resigned as an ambassador, I kept a lot of things in my chest, and I was still keep a lot of things in my chest regarding my resignation. All I can simply say, count me as one of the people who will support the revitalized peace agreement, the reform agenda.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar say they will form the unity government on Saturday. The two appeared together before reporters in Juba today, saying they agreed to resolve outstanding issues after the new transitional government is formed. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, President Kiir told reporters he will dissolve the current transitional government later today and appoint the agreed to five vice presidents tomorrow before forming the unity government on Saturday.
We sat today and agreed that we will form the government. And in the formation of the government, there are things that we will continue to discuss as a transitional government of national unity, such as security arrangement in Juba and protection of SPLM in opposition. I have taken the responsibility that, as the unified forces are still under training, my soldiers will be responsible for the general security in Juba. We have also agreed that my soldiers will protect all the VIPs from the opposition.
Speaking in Arabic briefly at the same news conference, opposition leader Machar confirmed the SPLM-IO will participate in forming a transitional government of national unity beginning Saturday.
Right now, we have agreed to form the government on February 22nd. What is expected next is for us to discuss, and we trust that we will settle it.
President Kiir appealed to officials in the current government who may not be reappointed into the next transitional government of national unity to not take up arms against the government.
I want to tell the people of South Sudan that all the changes that are taking place right now are to bring peace and not changes that will bring conflict again, because we are tired of conflict. Conflict stops development, and if we stop fighting in the coming 3 years, then we will see the difference.
Sudanese Sovereign Council member Mohamed Hamdan Himeti Daglo praised Kiir for agreeing to revert back to the original 10 states. He says both parties have shown interest in ending the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
Peace needs patience. Peace has a price. But by God's grace, we need to see Juba back to the way it was in the past, and even better than before. All the other outstanding issues that Machar was insisting on to be completed before the formation of the unity government are now in the past, because right now there is a trust between the president and Dr. Machar.
Kiir, Machar and the other parties to the peace deal failed to meet the two previous deadlines to form a unity government on May 12, 2019, and later on November 12, 2019. Both leaders face enormous pressure from Western leaders and regional leaders to agree on the number of states and their boundaries before Saturday deadline. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
One of President Salva Kiir's confidants has resigned from the ruling Sudan People's Liberation Movement Party. Ambassador Tirar Ring Deng tendered his resignation today to the president, who is also the chairman of the ruling SPLM. Ring says he resigned because his relationship with the president has not been smooth. He says he stands ready to offer his services to the people of South Sudan.
I want to take this opportunity to congratulate President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar for compromising on the issue of states, which has now paved the way for formation of the government of national unity. That's a step forward for both leaders to courageously come to terms in that vital understanding. I don't think that I am quitting my services to the people of South Sudan. Simply what I wrote in my letter of resignation, and I'm always very reserved not to raise a lot of eyebrows or insults or accusations against my leaders, particularly President Salva Kiir. I resigned as an ambassador last time, and I was very cautious. I just simply thanked President Kiir for appointing me as an ambassador to Russia, and I said, well, it's time now I step back. The same thing that what I have done, I have stepped back as a member of the SPLM-IG. That doesn't mean I will step back from offering my services. I did my part under the SPLM banner. And I feel today that since my relationship with President Salva Kiir has not been going very well, I went back to the country on the 22nd August 2018. We only met twice.
You are a close confidant of President Salva Kiir. I mean, you have been his advisor, you have been minister, you represented him in Russia. I mean, it's not just that easy for you to throw your hands in the air and walk out.
Well, I'm not whatever I can contribute wherever I will choose to go to, which I have not yet done now, whether I will sit at home in Ural, or whether I will stay in Juba. I'm planning to go to Juba as soon as my health improves. I will always be very happy to offer my advices. I will devote much of my time wherever I'm going to be in to look into it that we don't go back to war. Our people have suffered a lot.
I would not want to dwell much on your decision to resign because you are free to stay in the party or leave the party. But that decision comes at a time when President Kiir reversed the 32 states to 10, and that decision has not settled down with a lot of people. What is your take on that?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with the decision of President Kiir to from 32 to 10 states. As I already said, I support his bold decision that he has made. I support him on that agenda. And getting out of the SPLM-IG doesn't mean to say that I disagree with the decision of making it 10 states. All simpler, what I'm saying is, okay, I'm going to sit back for a while and see where I'm going to contribute effectively in the process of the revitalized peace agreement. All of us are involved with this process.
And you mentioned something about your relationship with President Kiir not going on well. I mean, you went to Juba, you met him only once, and that must have angered you.
Well, it has not angered me. I said as I wrote in my letter, it has not angered me. It's surprising to me, but don't let us, as I said already, I always don't want to watch our dead leading in public. As I said when I resigned as an ambassador, I kept a lot of things in my chest, and I will still keep a lot of things in my chest regarding my resignation. All I can simply say is that count me as one of the people who will support the revitalized peace agreement, the reform agenda, the legal framework as far as the constitution is concerned, as far as the reviving the security reforms are concerned. So I will support that.
That's Ambassador Tilar Ring Deng, former South Sudanese ambassador to Russia and former member of the ruling SPLM. He was speaking with me this past hour from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. Intercommunal fighting between the Low Nuer and Murle has left an unspecified number of people dead and many others injured. Authorities in Pibor administrative area accused armed Low Nuer youth from the Difang, Die and Akobo states of attacking areas in Pibor. As Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor, Pibor administrative area leaders say the fighting continued until today.
Speaking by phone from Juba, David Yao Yao, the former governor of now defunct Boma Estate, says the attackers killed and wounded a number of people in the areas of Nanam, Likwangule, and Bichbich in Pibor administrative area. Yao Yao says armed youth from Bie and Akobo Estates were behind the attacks.
These IOs and men from Longmuir communities, Gawar communities, and all this, because they came in three columns. We have not yet gotten full details about the casualties. I'm trying even now to call people there to check, because this is the dissolution of the state and government. There's no the right person representing the area to give us the right information out of the area.
Yao Yao says the attackers also raided three cattle camps, stole thousands of cattle, and abducted an unknown number of women and children. The Boma Administrative Area Coordinator, Peter Ajak Ligo, says many villagers fled their homes due to the fighting.
All civilians in the town, the Kwangole, are moved out from town, heading to Bibor area, Bibor Road. Those are now continuing fighting in place called Bechebek, which is Nanam, are the same where. According to the information, those who are from Gadiang to Pakeng are, according to the information, they are from Dukpa Dier, northern Bor.
Ajak is calling on the national government to intervene and protect the civilians.
I want to aware the government so that you know what happened there in the area, so that to pay attention about this fighting, to rescue civilians in the area, like now the Kwangole, or all civilians, the rapid, and they don't know who is going to protect them.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwei says the government is not aware of communal clashes in Pibor, but says national authorities will inquire and provide the necessary help.
I have no knowledge about it. I'm very busy with other issues since yesterday. But of course, if there are any people who have attacked the place, then these must be the people who are armed by the rebels. So far, I have not heard of anything. I will inquire.
Nyang Lul, the former deputy governor of the now defunct Bia State, says he heard and confirmed reports that youth from his area were involved in the attack on the Pibor administrative area.
I don't have any concrete information about it. I heard the rumor is that these young youth, they went toward Bibor areas or Morle areas.
Last month, authorities in the defunct Bia State accused armed Morle youth of killing 8 people and abducting 5 children in their area. They warned that unless Boma authorities prevented their youth from carrying out more attacks, Bia youth in neighboring communities would retaliate. While visiting Greater Jonglei a year ago, First Vice President Taban Dengai warned governors and other top state officials that if they did not step up action to prevent intercommunal violence, they ran the risk of being held responsible for future attacks carried out by youth from their communities. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UN officials say more than half of South Sudanese population could face acute food security this year. Find out when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister, because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad, because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us. Because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. An independent researcher says lack of funding for security sector reforms in South Sudan could affect the implementation of the revitalized peace deal. Joshua Kress visited various cantonment sites in Unity State recently and says most of the soldiers assembled at these sites are struggling to get basic services.
Many of them, the soldiers, have been really struggling. When I was visiting in October and November of 2019, with a lack of rations and a lack of medical supplies, such that many soldiers actually ended up abandoning the cantonment sites, which were often in quite remote rural areas, and they struggle to survive or even have the capacity of farming, and so they leave those sites. In some other sites, they're closer to their families, like in Mayom, so things are easier. But in those sites, they've been adversely affected by the flooding and so also have had to leave.
Talk to us about some areas, like in the equatorial areas. We are also hearing that there are cantonment sites, for instance, in Yei County, in Juba County and other places. Have you been to those areas?
My research focused on Unity State for this current tour, but I've assembled information about the cantonment sites across South Sudan. The ones in Equatoria have struggled the most with provision of food supplies and medical supplies. And indeed, at many of those sites, there's been tensions between opposition groups about who should get access to those supplies. And in a way, the cantonment sites have been sort of focal sites for disagreements within the opposition alliance.
What about the number of soldiers? Because it appears that some of these opposition groups are just there by names and they have no followers. Have you seen good number of soldiers at these cantonment sites?
So that's a very complicated picture around the country. At some sites, there are a good number of soldiers, and indeed, there's even competition to get into sites. In other places, the soldiers have registered and then just immediately left and returned to frontline positions. So it depends on whether the site is near, for instance, government forces, or whether it's relatively remote. In terms of who has joined the sites, that again varies in complicated ways around the country. So in some places, it's true there are opposition forces that have been looking for recruits or have been forcibly recruiting in order to try to boost up their numbers, their prestige and their importance in view of the formation of a new government. But in other sites, there's almost too many people who are actually part of the IO that want to go into cantonment. So again, it's a complicated picture, and it's a picture about the politics of demographics, about having enough soldiers to compete as a political power.
I've seen some pictures, talking about pictures, I've seen some pictures of young boys at these cantonment sites. What is happening there? Is it that just everybody is told to go there, or there is a criteria for choosing who should be at these cantonment sites?
So there is an actual body staff tasked with looking at who should join the cantonment sites, and there is a registration form taken for each of the people with their name, with where they're from, and with which branch of the army they'd like to join. And again, it's a complicated picture throughout the country that in some sites those records have been very thoroughly kept, and at other sites they've been less thoroughly kept, and perhaps there have been people who have joined who, for instance, weren't in the opposition before or had left the opposition. In South Sudan, everyone has either been in the military or knows someone in the military, and it's less clear that there are definitely soldiers and non-soldiers. Instead, there are a series of people who were a soldier for a while or were a member of the opposition, and so, of course, the cantonment sites do include that richness and that complexity of military rank.
And with this scenario hanging over this unified force, how do you foresee their effectiveness in the transitional period? Because this is very crucial. This is a force that is going to be the South Sudan Unified Army. How do you see their effectiveness?
The main problem that the National Unified Force, or Necessary Unified Force, as the peace process calls it, is facing is a question of the lack of funds. And that problem of a lack of funds for training, weapons, food, medical supplies is particularly acute because the timeframes of the original peace agreement are quite so quick. So I don't think there's actually a lack of will within bodies like the Joint Defence Board, the JDB, for implementing the peace agreement. Everyone I've spoken to inside the JDB, amongst other of the organisations within the sort of the panoply of security organisations, is very actively positive about forming a national unified force. But without urgently needed funds and more time, then this process will stall. And I think it's very dangerous to stall it, because a lot of the people who've gone into cantonment sites or are now moving to training sites, a lot of the young men do actually believe that they're going to get paid and that they're going to get ranks. And you've seen this recruitment and in part the removal of opposition forces to cantonment sites, who are now eagerly expecting the day when they get some resources.
That's Joshua Chris, an independent researcher who just returned from South Sudan. He was speaking with me in our studio here in Washington this past hour. Despite a slight reduction in the number of people facing food insecurity in South Sudan, some 6.5 million people in the country could face acute food insecurity at the height of the hunger season from May through July. That's according to three UN agencies and the government. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
The latest Integrated Food Security Pest Classification, or IPC, report released today shows 20,000 people are at particular risk of food insecurity from February to April. The report classifies people living in Akobo, Duke, and Ayot counties facing the most extreme level of hunger, technically known as the catastrophe level of food insecurity because of heavy flooding last year. Isaiah Chol Arwai, chairperson of the National Bureau of Statistics, says low crop production and pockets of insecurity are two big reasons for widespread food insecurity in South Sudan.
In the January 2020, an estimated 5.3 million people, or 45% of the population, were facing crisis IPC phase 3, acute food insecurity, or worse, out of which 1.1 million were facing emergency IPC phase 4, acute food insecurity, and 40,000 were in catastrophe IPC phase 5.
Chol says although there has been a slight reduction in food insecurity situation, the projection is still not encouraging.
Even as we celebrate the gains, let us not lose sight of the fact that more than half of the population of South Sudan will likely be severely food insecure during the lean season of May to July 2020.
Chol says South Sudan needs sustainable, multi-sectoral humanitarian assistance in the affected populations. Meshack Malo, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization country representative, says the slight drop in overall food insecurity is partly due to the country's relative instability.
However, we really, really must stress that the number of people in phase 3, 4, and 5 not only continue to be high, but dangerous.
Matthew Hollingsworth of the United Nations World Food Programme in South Sudan says conditions might improve as the unity government is formed.
On Saturday, this country will have a government of national unity. That's phenomenal. We will not be talking about opposition areas, government areas, and the complications of getting data and making analysis of areas under different actors' control. We will have one state, one government, one people, one South Sudan. And that's something that we in the food security world need to build upon.
But the report also estimates that 1.3 million children will suffer from acute malnutrition in 2020. Biram Ndaye is UNICEF representative.
We are still not reducing malnutrition. And the reason is, in fact, we are not preventing malnutrition. When we say we have 13% of children who are malnourished, we have almost 87 who are well-nourished. But we ignore them and we wait for them to become malnourished to start treating them.
Ndaye says it is important not only to treat malnutrition, but to focus on preventing malnutrition. He says the causes of malnutrition go beyond just a shortage of food. He says diseases like malaria contribute to malnutrition. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Netherlands has pledged 40 million euros to the UN Children's Agency in Sudan to support refugees, internal displaced persons, and host communities in East Darfur and West Kordofan states. The Dutch government says the program aims to provide a better environment for socio-economic, improved access to education, health, and strengthen the resilience of host communities. Michael Atit has more for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The initiative was launched in Khartoum on Wednesday by Dutch Minister for Foreign Trade and Development Cooperation, Sigrid Kaag. The donation, to be administered through UNICEF, the UN Agency for Refugee, UNHCR, the World Bank and others, will invest in programs that work to improve legal status of displaced persons, access to education for vulnerable children, and provide employment opportunities for members of the displaced groups and host communities. Kaag says the donation is part of a 500 million euro pledge from the Dutch government to help refugees and IDPs in Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Uganda, Kenya, and Ethiopia, and more than 100,000 South Sudanese refugees in Eastern Darfur and West Kordofan states.
They often carry the burden of displacement, and we want to create space and scope for young people to thrive and really develop the fullest of their human potential, often under very difficult circumstances.
Kaag tells South Sudan in Focus that the donation should help close the gap created by forceful displacement during the South Sudan's conflict. Abdallah Fadil, the UNICEF representative in Sudan, says the initiative will redefine the status of refugees and shape their legal status and help them reintegrate into local communities in Sudan.
This partnership with all of these agencies through the generous donation of the government and the people of Netherlands allows for protection of children, education, it allows for skills provisions, economic activities. All of those combined.
22-year-old Eritrean refugee Iol Heli has been living in Sudan for the last 7 years. Heli says economic hardship back home forced him and many other young people to leave Eritrea and look for better life in Sudan.
Most Eritreans, they don't feel safe in Eritrea. That's why, and there is no job opportunities in Eritrea. So even if they complete their education, there's a lot of competition. You might not even have enough job or to get a work even in Eritrea. That's why most of us migrate from Eritrea and come here to Sudan. And most of the way, it's not legal. Of course, it's by smuggling and traveling.
Alaa Masoud, an official from the Sudan's Labour Ministry, says her ministry is committed to working closely with its partners to implement programs that change the lives of refugees and IDPs in Sudan.
Now the priority of the transitional period is ensure the well-being of population of Sudan as well as the refugees, the IDPs, the returnees. Assure effective coordination among the government, the INGOs, the different sectors.
Under the initiative, the International Labour Organization will work with their partners to create jobs in Sudan. The World Bank is also expected to invest in education and employment opportunities for IDPs and refugees living in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's our show for this Thursday. With the news coming from Juba that a government will be formed over the weekend, allow me to take you to my village for some traditional Baka music. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.